This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, outside the area, 877-217-5757. We start our conversation today with Walt Leger. He is the Speaker Pro Tem of the Louisiana House, represents District 91 in New Orleans, which includes Central City, Uptown, the Lower Garden District, the Irish Channel, and a few other areas. And he is a man who certainly has a prominent place at the table in the lower chamber. Last week, in fact, a week ago today, members of the House met in Baton Rouge for a one-day retreat to learn about budget issues looming next year, with Louisiana facing a significant fiscal cliff when about $1.4 billion in temporary revenue ends on the 1st of July. Walt Leger, good to talk with you as always.
You too, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, what do you make of the budget situation right now?
Well, Jim, it's kind of like Groundhog's Day around here. We've continued to have the same types of issues from year to year, and over the last couple of years, as we discussed last week at the retreat you were referencing, we've taken up over 300 bills in the Ways and Means Committee to address structural issues with our fiscal mess in the state, and unfortunately, none of those have been successful at this point. We've had some temporary measures that have been implemented, the sales tax, one penny of sales tax increase, and, of course, some reductions to things like exemptions and rebates and tax credit programs. But the whole goal of that one penny of sales tax was to get us to a place where we could accomplish some structural reform. When that didn't happen in 2017, it left us in a bit of a mess, and so that's where we find ourselves now, trying to find a way towards structural reforms, but also in a need for some sort of a bridge to get us there. It's going to be difficult to do, I think, and we're going to have to do it relatively quickly, or we're going to have a very, very difficult time passing a budget during the 2018 session.
Well, your colleague Gene Reynolds, Democrat from Minden, who's head of the House Democratic Caucus, he said last week that 64 members of the House were on board for an increase in a gasoline tax, which, of course, is a tough lift, but it takes 70 votes. And with the supermajority, two-thirds of the House needed and two-thirds of the Senate, is it almost impossible these days to get a tax through the hoops?
It's become very, very difficult to get a two-thirds vote in the House. I am encouraged to hear about the support for the gas tax. I think we have a huge problem with infrastructure in the state, deferred maintenance, bridge and road hazards, all of which contribute to a negative climate for business investment. We're going to have to deal with a gasoline tax at some point, and I think we can keep working towards that. But even if we do accomplish that, and I think we should, we're still going to have challenges dealing with our budget situation, and any gasoline tax that gets enacted is going to be dedicated strictly to infrastructure mm-hmm. investments, as I think it should be. If we could deal with that issue, I think it'd be a big step in the right direction. It still leaves us with the difficult thing of dealing with personal income tax, and looking at a way to make sure that we develop a tax system that's fair, that's simple, it's competitive with other states, and that provides stable revenue to adequately fund the government services that people have and our constituents have talked about us needing the most.
What would happen, worst case scenario, if the $1.4 billion goes off the books and you have to make do without that?
The worst case scenario is pretty bad. The reason that it's so detrimental, and I often talk to people who say, "Well, you have about a $32 billion budget. You should be able to reduce $1.4 billion relatively easily." As I know you are aware, and many listeners are at this point too, we have such a small amount of discretionary spending. It's really only about $3.4 billion. And of that $3.4 billion, $1.6 is healthcare spending for voluntary services that nobody really thinks are voluntary. They're things like waivers and other programs for the persons with disabilities. $926 million is higher education, $166 million is K-12 education, $655 million is other, including things like the Department of Corrections. So those are the places you have to go to cut. And if you cut $1.4 billion out of $3.4 billion, it amounts to, you're starting to get close to a 50% across-the-board cut in those areas. And that's just not sustainable in any way. It'd be devastating to higher education and healthcare, but it would be it'd be truly harmful to the to our probation officers, to our public safety workers, to those people employed in the Department of Corrections, and I think we'd have a really, really difficult time with those cuts. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any reasonable person in the legislature believes that that's where we're going to end up. I think anyone that with common sense and reason knows that we can't reduce the budget by $1.4 billion, that it's simply not an option.
We're visiting with Walt Leger, the Speaker pro tem of the Louisiana House. He is a Democrat from New Orleans, narrowly missed being elected Speaker when John Bel Edwards took office on the 11th of January last year. And right now, I think it's fair to say there's division in the House. There's not only division between Democrats and Republicans, there's division between Republicans and Republicans. So with that as the backdrop, is it really realistic to expect some kind of a consensus?
I do expect it, and I'll have to say, while the meeting last week was largely a briefing, there were many small conversations that were able to take place, and I certainly had a feeling that there was growing consensus that something significant has to be accomplished. So without being overly optimistic, I do feel a little bit of optimism that we're going to continue to look at things like sales tax exemptions, deductions, rebates, and probably look to make some, the reductions that we made back in 2015, some of those programs cut back by 25%, some cut back by 28%. I would think there'll be a pretty strong consensus to make those reductions permanent. I also think there's growing support for the idea of trying to remove some of the sales tax exemptions from our existing sales tax as a way of potentially lowering the sales tax rate at the state level. There seems to be some support for that. And I think there's probably, at the end of the day, going to be support for a reduction of the excess itemized deduction, which currently allows 100% deduction. I believe there'll be consensus to reduce that to 50%. It'll protect things like charitable contributions and mortgage interest, but it will net to the state about $164 million, which will be a permanent structural fix. And we need 53 votes for that. I think we'll have the 53 on that. It's all of those things, though, still leave us with about a $500 million structural shortfall. Some of that can be handled by some cuts around the edges, but we can't cut $500 million out of $3.4 billion and stabilize higher education and healthcare the way that we want to. So I still think there are some other measures that we're going to have to try to continue to build consensus around, and that's just to keep things the way they are. We haven't even talked about investing in early childhood education or investing significantly in road improvements, bridge improvements, and other infrastructure that can really help move the state forward and create jobs for the people of the state.
Yesterday at the Baton Rouge Rotary Club, the president of LSU, King Alexander, expressed dismay about the uncertainty of TOPS. He says it makes it difficult to make a pledge to the student body when TOPS is really a fluid target each year. He would like to see this as something that is a done deal before each session. Is that possible?
There is an ongoing task force that's studying TOPS right now to make recommendations to the legislature about how to make permanent this program. About 60 to 65% of the TOPS funding is dedicated in some form or fashion. At this point, the program costs roughly $300 million, so finding 35, 40% of that funding is not an insignificant amount of money. I understand the desire to make that program stable and predictable, just like I understand the need for higher education funding in general to be stable and predictable. I think those are things that are priorities for many members. My expectation is that that TOPS will be a priority in funding for the majority of members. And so, you know, I expect it to get done. It would be much easier to get it done if we would address the overall structural difficulties that we're facing and create a system of revenue that's stable and predictable and grows when the economy grows. We've gotten there were some tax breaks given back in 2007-08 with the partial repeal of STELE that's really just put us on unstable footing. And one way or another, we have to find our way back to stability. I don't think that necessarily means a whole lot of new revenue, but it's got to be able to grow as the economy grows, because the cost of things continue to go up regardless of whether or not we fund those things.
We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Walt Leger on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar producing. Your email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And the phone lines are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757 everywhere else. Dan downtown has been waiting patiently. Dan, you're on with Walt Leger.
Yeah, Mr. Leger, is the problem that Grover Norquist and Alec have so much influence over the legislative right-wingers that they can never be seen to vote for a tax increase, no matter what the adverse effects on Louisiana families?
Walt, are you able to hear Dan?
Yeah, I think I heard it. I'm not.
About Grover Norquist and his influence?
I understand. Look, there's no question that that organizations like those, led by Norquist and pushed by organizations from outside of the state, have had an impact on the way that legislators vote. It's really crucially important for people to be reaching out to their legislators and asking them to solve these problems that we have. I really believe that the vast majority of people in every district across the state want us to have a stable financial footing so that we can do the things that state government promises to do. The people deserve and want to have high-quality roads, and they understand the need for infrastructure investments, and they want our colleges to be improving and not struggling as our regional competitors invest and we disinvest in things like LSU or Louisiana Tech or any of our other great universities. So we've done some great things with higher education in an environment where there have been significant cuts. We could do incredible things by stabilizing funding and beginning to reinvest. And we've got to find a way in this state to push out the noise of people who don't have the best interest of our state at heart, but who put pressure on legislators to vote against anything that will allow us to have some stability, because it's in the best interest of some organization, some type of business, or some small sliver of individuals that don't make up the heart of what Louisiana is.
Ellen in Sherwood. Hi, Ellen. You're on with Walt Leger.
Hi. Following Dan's comments, certainly the Koch brothers don't have Louisiana's interests at heart. They have their own interests, and Louisiana has been suffering for it for years. But if we could only present the idea of not raising taxes but restoring the STELE plan, the STELE revenue, that would be the solution, I think, to most of the problems we have.
I think you're correct. That would be a significant solution. It may be the only thing necessary to create stability and return us to a place where we'd be able to have some stronger footing and be able to get back to focusing on how we can grow the economy and how we can support our colleges and universities, and how we can continue to give people opportunity, improve roads, improve bridges, improve infrastructure. The people of the state voted to implement STELE in 2002. Unfortunately, in 2007, and then again in 2008, there were personal income tax cuts that were implemented, and I was there, and I voted for it. So I'll take my part of the responsibility for that. But it's time for us to reexamine that. And when we repealed the personal income tax portion and we failed to address the sales tax exemption portion, we created a hole and we created a structural problem with our finances. And so, I've talked to people about this over the years. It's not bad policy when there are surpluses mm-hmm. to give a tax break and return some of the tax dollars to the taxpayers of the state. The problem becomes if you're and really builds if you're unwilling to continue to reexamine the environment and reimplement that personal income tax at times where revenue is not growing. I see a system that could work very, very well if policymakers were willing to adjust things as time goes on according to the things that are happening in our economy. Unfortunately, it's very, very easy to reduce. It's not necessarily easy to restore, as you said. And I do think some restoration to the more stable STELE system would provide a lot of stability for the people of the state and put us back on track to where we need to be.
All right. I'm going to go through a few emails from listeners. Bill asks about 10 years ago, tomorrow will be the anniversary of Bobby Jindal's election, and I guess it was your election, too, to the House. Were the Jindal years good for the state?
Well, it was, I think they were difficult for the state in a number of ways. I think that we got into a habit of exploding the capital outlay budget, which has now made it very, very difficult for us to make strategic investments in infrastructure. We began expending dollars on some educational programs that maybe took us down the wrong road. I do think we made some strategic reforms to our K-12 education system in the city of New Orleans that have been positives. But overall, when you combine what ended up being an economic downturn and the disinvestment of higher education, I think there were it was a very rough 10 years for the state of Louisiana.
All right. Another listener notes that yesterday U.S. Senator John Kennedy tore into the mayor of New Orleans at a hearing on Capitol Hill. And I mean, it was a very personal attack on Mitch Landrieu. Was this appropriate?
Well, I did see something in the paper this morning about some of the comments. I think it'd be really helpful if Senator Kennedy would focus on trying to help the state of Louisiana instead of fighting with Democratic politicians in the state of Louisiana. I mean, the campaign is over unless he's planning on running for something else that we're not aware of. And, we've got so many issues at the federal level that the state of Louisiana needs help on, not the least of which is the continued effort at health care reform, quote-unquote, and the need for recovery dollars in vast portions of the state of Louisiana, including the Baton Rouge area, parts of central and northern Louisiana, where serious floods have caused serious damage. We haven't gotten all of the support that we need up there. I think his time would be much better used focused on delivering for the people of the state and not fighting with politicians in the state.
Okay, final caller for Walt Leger, Tom in North Baton Rouge. Tom, please be brief. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I heard the lady just a few moments ago want to bring back the STELE plan, and I just want you to know that I had a friend the first year that was implemented that paid $15,000 more in Louisiana income tax personally, a couple, than before the STELE plan was implemented.
All right. Now, there's probably because their income went up because the configuration was such that it would have been impossible for STELE alone to have caused a $15,000 increase. But would you like to add to that?
Oh, yeah. Look, what I'd say is they must have had significant income because with the changes that between where things are now and where STELE was, we're talking about effective tax rate changes of something like 3.3% to 3.6%. So you're talking about a 0.3% change for most people under the plan. That's not insignificant. and I want to suggest that it is. It's certainly more significant as far as actual dollars go as your income rises, because that's just the nature of a progressive tax policy. But the Stelle plan alone, and the adjustment that we would make, and the adjustment that we did make back in 2007 and 8, was really just adjusting part of the Stelle plan, and effective tax rates would be changed by less than 0.5% under most of the proposals that have been discussed.
Walt Leger, thank you for joining us. Speaker Pro Tem of the Louisiana House, and best of luck. Obviously, what happens in the lower chamber will largely determine what happens to our state in the next few years.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Take care. See you soon.
Bye.
We're back with Michael Baychok, the renowned political consultant, partner of Trey Orso, and he will talk about what's going on, and we'll expand on this feud between John Kennedy and Mitch Landrieu. Is John Kennedy running for governor? Now the news with Karen Henderson on. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Allie Baltazar is producing, and your numbers for Talk Louisiana are 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. We're joined by Democratic political consultant Michael Baychok. A few days ago, we heard from Republican Roger Villery, and he was touting the possible candidacy of one John Neely Kennedy for governor. That election is 2 years away, and John Kennedy is giving every indication that he wants to be governor and will possibly run for governor. He'll be 68 years old at the end of 2019, so if he runs, this may be his last best shot. And yesterday at a hearing that involved Jeff Sessions, who was questioned about any number of things, including Russian interference in the national election, John Kennedy seized the moment to apologize for the state of Louisiana for remarks that Mitch Landrieu, the mayor of New Orleans, made about Jeff Sessions. This was in regard to sanctuary cities and immigration. John Kennedy is a guy who knows how to grab headlines, Michael Baychok, and you've worked with him, I believe.
Thank you, Jim. Yes, we were just talking about, I did work for John back in 1991 when he ran for Attorney General. He was coming off his work with Buddy Romer, Governor Buddy Romer, and John decided, as a Democrat at the time, to run for Attorney General. That was the race that elected Richard Ayoub to the state Attorney Generalship.
And we can go back to 1989 when he was working for Governor Romer as a Democrat, and John Kennedy was the architect of a fiscal reform plan which included a lot of tax increases. The voters, in their wisdom, shot it down 55% to 45%. But many thought that it was kind of a precursor to the Stelle plan. It would have solved a lot of the budget woes that we've had in Louisiana.
Right, and I think they ran I remember the campaign part of that. It was Amendment Number 1, and the governor, Buddy Romer, was on the TV as he was. He's one of the greatest communicators we've ever had as a governor, and he was able to sell that plan to the voters, I believe. Or actually,
It lost, right.
Yeah. He tried to sell it. That would have, you know, changed the course of the fiscal cliff.
Well, yeah, it could
for,
have,
for
it
many
could
years,
have been a game changer.
It could have been a game changer, and it wasn't.
It probably cost him the 91 election, that he could not get that plan through. And he, of course, was frustrated that people were working on the outside to thwart his attempts at what he viewed as progress. But John Kennedy, through the years, has evolved from a moderate to left-of-center Democrat to a very conservative Republican. And this happens to people in life, but some are saying it's more political pragmatism than any kind of real philosophical shift. You know him well. Do you think that he has always been a conservative Republican and was playing the game the other way, or is it the other way around?
I don't know that I say I know him well. I've worked for him. I've visited with him over the years as he was a Democrat, and even when he was in state treasurer. I'd have to let Senator Kennedy speak for why he's changed his positions, but I certainly believed him when I worked for him in 1991 through the 90s and visited with him, that he believed in his heart, you know, some of the true things about the Democratic Party, about helping people less fortunate than he was. So, you know, but there's a lot of people that have changed their positions. It seems that mm-hmm. his positions conveniently have changed as he's sought higher office and sought different offices. So you always have to question, you know, whether that's a real heart change or whether it's a more of a pragmatic, how can I get elected? Now, one thing we know about John Kennedy is he likes to get elected, and he's run for a lot of offices over the past almost nearly 30 years.
Well, he just got elected to the U.S. Senate, and he sought that position three times, running in 2004 against David Vitter and Chris John as a Democrat, and then in 2008 as a Republican against Mary Landrieu, and then last year he won as a Republican over Foster Campbell, and won big with over 60% of the votes, just over 60%. So he just got elected to that position, and in most states, being a U.S. senator is superior to being governor. You get a six-year term. You don't have these day-to-day headaches that governors have. But in Louisiana, it's much different. And all indications are that he's all but all in for the 2019 race. Is that a surprise, or is that fairly common thought with Senator Kennedy always pining for the governor's office?
I don't think it's a secret anymore that he wants to be governor. And I don't think it's any change in his behavior. You know, Senator Kennedy has literally been running for office and likes to actually run for office. He is one of the very best fundraisers. He likes to call people, ask them for money. He still does that as a United States senator. And for the past 20 years, he's been running for something. So it's almost, you know, the way he is, he's conditioned. I mean, that he's been doing this for so long that he feels like, wow, a six-year term, and I don't really have to run for a couple. You know, I can take a few years off. He's apparently not wanting to take a few years off. So, I mean, I expect that he will, you know, at some point announce his candidacy and publicly, and it won't become such a big secret.
And even if he were to lose, he still would have 3 years left on his Senate term at the very least, and probably then would ramp up for reelection. But the guy who's most likely to succeed him as treasurer, John Schroeder, who finished second to Derek Edwards in Saturday's race for treasurer, he resigned his seat in the House. And that took some courage. It may have helped him a little bit as far as turnout in his district, since there was a special election for his open seat. But usually politicians don't resign seats to run.
No, they don't. That was a you know, a unique and creative way to get some press. I'm not sure how much it helped him in terms of votes. And as you said, his, you know, special election in his House district probably turned out a couple thousand more voters, maybe. But it did allow himself to distance himself from the legislature, whatever they were going to do that session. But again, and he did run a television commercial that kind of took to task the legislature that he was a part of for the past, you know, years in his term. So he may have had that in his mind. The resignation was a precursor to what they thought they were going to do with voters and communicate on television.
We're visiting with political consultant Michael Baichok. If you'd like to join the conversation, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. 13% or thereabouts, maybe as close to 14%. But that was the turnout for Saturday's election for a statewide office, and other items on the ballot. If not for the New Orleans mayor's race, the turnout would have been around 10% statewide. That's not good.
No, it's terrible. It's not only not good, it's awful, it's embarrassing. But I think we know, you know, at least in the practice of campaigns and political consulting, that, you know, what drives turnout higher is the expense of money, advertising, the amount of touches that voters get from candidates or causes. You know, there were a few races around the state that were still special elections where turnout was, relatively good. There was a judge's race across the river in Pointe Coupee and West Baton Rouge, and the turnout was 40%. But it was, you know, a smaller district, and the candidates were able to go talk to people and get them excited and inform them. Unfortunately, as treasurer, which is not an exciting office, it doesn't spur a lot of interest. You know, there wasn't a lot of money spent to inform voters that there was actually an important election.
We mentioned John Schroeder, who's the survivor of the three Republicans. He's in the runoff with Derek Edwards. But the other Republicans did some things, too, to try to separate themselves from the pack. Angele Davis made it known that she was going to support and advance the Trump agenda, if a treasurer can do that sort of thing. And Neil Reiser, who may be the most conservative member of the legislature, was making a lot of friends in the New Orleans area among black Democrats. So you're smiling. Is this just politics as we know it in Louisiana?
It apparently is. I don't like to criticize or you know any of my comrades in the political consulting business, because I don't know that I wasn't involved in that campaign. Certainly, Neil Reiser's appearance on some of the ballots in New Orleans has been reported, and how much money that he spent on that, and it didn't really turn into a lot of vote. I think Republicans tend to underestimate the decision-making process that goes on among voters these days, especially in New Orleans. And then Angele, you know, Davis, again, she ran that Trump ad early. It must have moved her numbers because they came back to it at the end. I just thought that that ad, and especially in Baton Rouge, among people that might be voting for her that didn't have a place to land, it may have turned those voters off, and that may have hurt her at the end. But at the end of the day, that may have been their best message, and it just didn't get them to where they wanted to be on Election Day.
She got 86,000 votes. Schroeder got 96,000 votes. Big turnout in early voting in St. Tammany helped John Schroeder. But it is amazing that 96,000 votes essentially elect Schroeder, the treasurer, and we've got 4.7 million people and 3 million registered voters, and you can win a statewide race with essentially 96,000 votes. That's sobering.
Certainly not a lot of votes, is it, Jim? I mean, if you took it down to how many per precinct, it's certainly not a lot either. You know, I don't know how to explain the low turnout other than, again, it wasn't a very interesting office. You know, treasurer is probably the least interesting and least
sexy.
Yeah. Sexy office, and people don't have any interaction with it. The other thing is, you know, our political climate these days, and, you know, we don't live in a bubble here in Louisiana or Baton Rouge. And the national climate is, you know, turns people off. They don't feel like their vote really matters anymore. So I think that has some sort of effect.
We'll spend another segment with the astute political consultant Michael Baychak, who's a partner of Trey Orso. They handle campaigns all across the country, but are based right here in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us talk@talklouisiana.org. We're back in a few minutes. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. For Michael Baychak, who's been doing his thing as a political consultant for many, many years, and has been a partner with Trey Orso for how long?
I think we've been together since, Trey's going to kill me, but I think it's 2001, yeah. I think.
And Trey is a former executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, and you're a Democratic consultant. And in these days, generally, consultants stay with one party. You probably don't handle any Republicans, do you?
Well, there's an exception for every rule. So you know, when there is a, let's say, local race
and
with no Democrats, and you know, friends, and you know, as you grow up in Baton Rouge in Louisiana, you make friends and on both sides of the aisle. So when, you know, a friend runs, there's certainly an exception, but no, it's mostly, you know, I'd say 95% or more, you know, Democratic mm-hmm. candidates. And, you know, as you said, you know, we work outside of the state almost as much as we work inside of the state.
We recently, as in the last guest, had Walt Leger. Many thought he would run as a candidate for mayor of New Orleans, and you have had some association with him. He might have won that race.
Well, we did. We, you know, Walt is a friend, and we worked for him leading up to helping him make his decision of whether to run for mayor. We started that process, you know, probably 6-8 months ago, early this year, and he ultimately decided that it just wasn't, you know, the right time for him to run. Looking back, you know, I think that Walt would be a fantastic mayor for New Orleans, and I think that he probably would have been very competitive with the field of candidates that ultimately assembled. I would like to think that we could have helped him win, but, you know, that's, I don't want to look backwards. We'll look forwards, right, and maybe there's another opportunity down the road.
Well, you did help Sharon Weston Broome win. You were her political consultant, and she won a close race against Bodie White. And like any newcomer, there have been some bumps in the road. Your thoughts about where she is in the first 9 months or so?
There certainly has. You know, I'll be the first to admit, I think she will be too, that, you know, there have been some bumps in the road. It was a, you know, a very, very short transition between campaign to being mayor. It was, I think, the shortest transition in the history of Baton Rouge. And when we talked about that back in January, we probably didn't realize how important it was to have a longer, you know, transition. That's why they do those things,
right,
you know, from being a candidate to being a mayor. And I think that certainly had some effect on, you know, maybe the bumps in the road for the first, you know, few months. I also think that, you know, again, I'll go back to, we don't live in a bubble here. And I do believe that the national environment has affected Baton Rouge and trickled down, and that there's much more scrutiny on a mayor, on a candidate, on someone doing their job. Even Governor John Bel Edwards seems to feel much more scrutiny from the other side, rather than letting, you know, working together and trying to figure out how to make, you know, a city or a state move forward. So there have been some roadblocks put in front of her, the mayor, in these first 9 months, and so trying to navigate around those has been a new experience for her. But I do believe, you know, she's certainly on the right track. She was the right choice, and I believe, you know, having Daryl Gissel there is going to be a very good positive influence and factor to move her agenda forward.
All right, and Daryl last week was named the CAO, and we had him on this show, and he was at one time the executive director of the Louisiana Republican Party. He's now an independent. But a bright fellow, an earnest guy, sincere as can be, but it is an unusual couple.
It is, and I think that's going to be a positive. You know, we are a diverse community. There are people that come from all different walks of life. It's a very large geographic community. You know, Jim, that we now have more registered voters in Baton Rouge than does New Orleans. Now, our tax base is not as big, but we have more people, more registered voters. That's hard to believe.
And biggest parish in the state.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, we're not the small little sleepy town parish that we used to be, you know, 20 years ago. And so I think it takes a diverse leadership team to lead a diverse parish. And I think that's one of Mayor Broome's goals.
Got a few questions from you. This one from Leslie in South Downs. How can the impulse for less informed voters to knee-jerk pull levers straight down party lines be changed, or can it?
Well, I hope so. I think it is. It's, you know, at some levels, it does. We do see, you know, Republicans voting for Democrats and Democrats voting for Republicans, and you know, saying let's vote for the person, not for the party. But it does take, you know, that personal interaction, because you have to know the person, or at least think you know the person, before you know, toss them aside or vote mm-hmm. toss your party aside to vote for that person. So it takes communication and involvement, and that, unfortunately, you know, sometimes involves more money, but it also takes talking about it, you know. And when our political leaders talk about things that they can support that their party doesn't support, I think that helps voters say, well, I can support that person rather than my party.
Scott in Baton Rouge asked, do you think John Schroeder will run for a higher office? And if so, what office? Now, if he were to do this, he wouldn't be the first treasurer to use the office as a springboard. But is John Schroeder, is this his last rodeo?
I don't know. But if he follows the course that John Kennedy set as treasurer, he'll run for every office that comes up, apparently. I mean, Kennedy seemed to run for, as you pointed out, you know, Senate.
Yeah, well, I think he's actually had 10 campaigns. Yeah. counting the governor's race in 2003, in which he was an announced candidate but pulled out when Bobby Jindal got Governor Foster's blessing. And that was a smart move by John Kennedy, who is an astute politician. And if it's 2019, Kennedy versus Edwards, that'll be a good race. I think it'll be a very close race. But John Bel Edwards, he probably likes the fact that if he's going to be opposed, that he's opposed by somebody who has a record. It's a lot easier to do that than some fresh face.
That's conventional wisdom, yes. And I don't speak for the governor, but I think the anticipation is certainly that John Kennedy will be his opponent or one of the opponents that he'll face in 2019.
Now, Steve Wynum, the former budget director, commenting on Walt Leger's appearance earlier, says Walt laid out the problem clearly and about the colleagues. It says, do colleagues agree with their constituents that a service involved is educating them rather than allowing them to continue to believe we don't have a revenue problem? And that's something that Senator Kennedy and Treasurer Kennedy, he said for years that we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. The governor disagrees.
Well, I don't know that he certainly does disagree with the principle, but we also have a problem that we give out too many, industrial tax exemptions that cost our state $6 billion a year or more. And we have to examine those and take a look at those and see which ones are returning real benefits to the state and which ones aren't. And I mean, we just cannot as a state continue to hand out money to corporations and big businesses when, our people are hurting and need that money. So we wouldn't have a revenue problem if we stopped handing out money to those companies. I'll also say, Jim, as I said, the legislature has also evolved into a body, at least the House has, that is very political and very partisan, and we've mm-hmm. never seen that before. And, there are arguments made in the House of Representatives that simply say, we can't pass this because it will make the governor look good. And when you get to that point in a legislative body, nothing is going to get done. And we've seen that really in the past, couple of sessions. When it's the governor's idea,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to get opposed, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. And I think that's the point we're at right now.
And lastly, President Trump remains popular in Louisiana, if we can believe polls. And the congressional delegation, including the two senators, they're behind him. I mean, solidly behind him. Any surprise about that?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise. He won the state, overwhelmingly. But I'm privy, to a few polls over the past couple of years, that support is not as high as it was, and it is also roughly, split. I mean, we are a state that did elect Trump, but he's not done anything to hold that support, and it's not rising. It's actually falling. So I don't think it's such a huge asset to have Donald Trump as your supporter if you're going to run, a campaign statewide and that's your only claim to fame that I'm a Trump supporter. Otherwise, I guess Angele Davis would have done a whole lot better.
Well, she did tie herself to President Trump. But the others, Neil Reiser and John Schroeder, also were saying kind words about our president, who's now in day 273. Michael, it's always a pleasure to visit with you, and let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Jim.
Michael Baychuk. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.